Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Scott, we have reached a little bit of a lull in the offseason calendar around the National Football League following a week last week that was dedicated to free agency and those acquisitions that we saw early and often in the legal tampering window in those big moves and flurries just about 8 days ago. And then the league year officially began 6 days ago on a Wednesday, and now here we are where we're still getting some news around the National Football League, but things are starting to slow, at least for the next few weeks, until we really ramp it up once again for the 2024 NFL Draft. There will be a lot of draft cycle conversation. There is still some updates to bring around the National Football League as well to see how it all impacts a new year in 2024.
Yeah, and I'm still waiting for the Bears to just come out and say, okay, we're drafting Caleb Williams. Now they traded Justin Fields, right? So most of the big-time free agents are gone. You know, to me, there's no reason why the Bears wouldn't announce that, unless maybe they're really not, convinced that Williams is the guy at this point. I would think they would. And an interesting story out of San Francisco we can get into here, just a little bit. Just a little quirk that makes me think that there's more to this story than meets the eye with the Niners yesterday being penalized draft choice.
Yes, they were penalized for payroll errors in 2022. It will cost them their 2025 pick and something in the fourth round that will dip off by a couple of draft selections for this upcoming 2024 NFL draft. We'll get to that administrative error that is having implications on San Francisco's franchise in just a moment. First, we welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience here. Hour number one, the only hour, as we are going here on Sports Grid Radio for Football Full Circle up until 1 p.m. Eastern, Sirius XM channel 159. That's the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens, and this is Football Full Circle. Speaking of San Francisco, a former now 49ers player, Chase Young, who was shipped from Washington to San Fran at the trade deadline a season ago and did have some impactful defensive plays for a 49ers team, of course, that won the NFC title and appeared in Super Bowl 58, is now on his way to New Orleans. A one-year, $13 million deal. Chase Young, Scott, will be in New Orleans as a new member of the Saints. It is about to be year number 5 for the second overall pick of the 2020 NFL Draft.
Yeah, he may turn into the next Javion Clowney, Ben. You know, a guy that all the hype and all this and that, number second overall pick by the Washington Commanders, you know, a few years back, and always injured, never producing on the field. He had a couple plays for San Fran, 2.5 sacks in 9 games. There's a reason why they let him go, right? So Saints say, why not? Let's buy in. We'll give him a 1-year deal. Decent money, right? $13 million. Saints, you know, one of the worst teams sack-wise last year, so I get why they, you know, are trying after him to throw a little flyer. Maybe he's a little bit more healthier, but he just hasn't produced, Ben. And if San Fran lets you go, then, you know, they generally know what they're doing, especially on defense, right? Then that tells me a little something, but he just hasn't, he's never lived up to the hype. Just hasn't. Kind of like Clowney. Like I said, to me, he's a carbon copy of Javion Clowney. All the hype and this and that, and people are still talking about it sitting in the bowl game against Michigan. He hasn't lived that down. He's made so much money on one hit and one Sports Illustrated cover. But has he really been great? I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe not great for Jadeveon Clowney, a guy that has bounced around multiple teams in the last 4 to 5 NFL seasons after being that first overall pick for the Houston Texans, a 3-time Pro Bowler in Jadeveon Clowney, who has played for a decade in the NFL. So maybe not that optimal level, Scott. Maybe not a first ballot Hall of Famer in Canton, Ohio, that when you're drafted first or second overall as an edge rusher, you are supposed to be that complete impact player on the defensive side of the football, but maybe somebody that just sticks around the National Football League for a long time. Chase Young did win the Defensive Rookie of the Year award in his rookie campaign, 7.5 sacks with Washington, and then injuries plagued his next 2 years, only 12 games in total in both 21 and 2022. Did play 16 in 2023 for two different clubs, the Commanders and the 49ers, and now gets a chance in New Orleans. Scott, I think that's really interesting when you look at the Saints. At this point of the offseason, this year as compared to this point of the offseason a year ago. Right now, the Falcons are the darlings of the NFC South after the acquisition of Kirk Cousins, who, oh, by the way, is going to wear number 18 and not number 8. That will remain with the tight end, Kyle Pitts. But the Falcons now, Scott, odds-on favorite -110. If you remember at this point an offseason ago, it was the Saints who were really the stellar team in a weak NFC South division after their acquisition of Derek Carr. They were supposed to be the team to win the NFC South. They were booked as the short favorites, not quite in minus money, but around a +115 number. And New Orleans really never reached that level of optimism or expectation a season ago. They did finish with 9 wins, but due to tiebreakers, lost out to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And now the Saints, Scott, will enter 2024 with the third best price in an NFC South division they were expected to win a season ago.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? I remember talking to you about it last year, saying, boy, it's surprising that the Saints are so low, because no one knew what we were going to get out of Carolina, and no one was expecting anything out of Tampa Bay, even after they signed Baker Mayfield, and Atlanta was kind of up in the air with Desmond Ridder coming back, and we were like, you know, why are the Saints such a small favorite? Another example how the boys in Vegas, you know a little bit more than we do. So now they're +340. I might buy in one more time, but I really might. I had them last year, had a little piece on them, too. 2 years ago, I may go one more time on the Saints. They didn't really do a whole heck of a lot this offseason to really improve their program, but I'm just guessing Derek Carr second year there, you know, it might help a little bit more than what he had last year. Not in love with their coaching staff, that's for sure, but you know, that defense to me is the best unit in the NFC South, whether it's Falcons offense, Falcons defense, Bucks offense, defense. I think the Saints defense can be the best unit out of all those 8 possibilities. And because of that, I might be willing to buy in one more time.
That is interesting, Scott, because I think many people would say Atlanta offensively, by far the best unit in that division, because that will be what ultimately determines the division if the Falcons are able to emerge victorious. The Saints do have a lot on the defensive side of the football to love, and under Dennis Allen, who returns for his 3rd year as the head coach, who was the defensive coordinator under Sean Payton for 6 seasons in New Orleans, at least they retain that level of success. The question for New Orleans and their overall outlook is offensively, but defense, Scott, you are correct. They've been really good, even as they have come up a little bit short based on true postseason success.
Yeah, finished up strong. Not that I really believe how you finish one year is going to carry over into the next year, but they won a couple of games. Maybe they found it, you know, just a little bit. A little disappointed in them, right? When we were going over all the moves and all the teams that made, you know, and what they did, you know, the Saints really didn't do anything. I'm a little surprised at that. I would have thought they maybe would have gotten a Derek Carr, another wide receiver, and a little depth at the running back position with Kamara, maybe getting a little older and his issues. Yeah. But they really didn't do too much.
Another thought on the NFC South on the other side of the break, because for the last 2 years, Scott, we thought maybe just a winning record would win you the division, but that would probably be the only team to reach the playoffs. Is that the same thought in the NFC in 2024? That's the question next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC on the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. So, Scott, I brought up this idea right as we hit the commercial break, looking at where the Saints were an offseason ago in the NFC South and their outlook to where things stand right now. Third best price, plus 340 to win the NFC South. The Falcons are the odds-on favorites at minus 110. And that second best number is the three-time reigning divisional champ, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who in the past two seasons won the division in 2022, Scott, with a losing record. That was the final year of Tom Brady. Won the division last year with only 9 wins. And I remember having these conversations with you, Scott, last season. Felt the same way, really, as 2023 played out in the National Football League as well. That when you really look at the NFC South, it was a one team league or division rather into the postseason. Whoever won the division, they would get the opportunity to host, but we weren't really all that concerned with any of the other teams from the division in terms of contending or competing for a wild card spot. But now that the floor does not seem as deep outside of Carolina, and we are probably looking at a Saints team that has a win total of 8.5. I would assume the same for the Buccaneers and a Falcons team that will be closer to 10 with what is expected of them and new quarterback Kirk Cousins. Scott, do you think there's a potential that we could see multiple NFC South teams into the NFC postseason this upcoming season?
You might, right? I mean, the NFC really, you know, to me, it's still just as bad this year seemingly will be as it was last year. It does seem open. That division's not as bad as we said last year. It's actually balanced, you know, outside of Carolina. There aren't many divisions, really, when you think about it, right, that have three teams. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Atlanta, Tampa Bay, or New Orleans winning that division. I would be with Carolina. Whereas the NFC East, I'd be surprised if it wasn't Dallas or Philadelphia, right? NFC West, San Fran and L.A., clearly the top two. NFC North, you know, Detroit, and then you want to throw Green Bay in there, but really Chicago, Minnesota. So it's actually a pretty balanced division out of all the ones, you know. Yeah. Maybe the AFC East has, if you want to include the Jets with Rodgers coming back, Buffalo, Miami, Jets, and obviously the North is loaded. But really, I think that's one of the few divisions where you can make a case for three teams to win it.
Yeah, I really think it could be competitive. And if we're talking about now, not the bare minimum to win a division, be a winning record at 9-8 in a division where we saw 2 years ago, again, a losing record of 8-9 end up being the divisional champ, you're going to have teams vying for those double-digit wins, 4-10 or 11. And if multiple teams can reach that threshold, Scott, then you're looking at one to win the division and maybe another or multiple in that wild card race. When you look at where the rest of the NFC South is in terms of the NFC Conference Championship odds as a whole, when you look at where things are in the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers are such a short favorite compared to everybody. Then it's the Lions at 6-1, but San Francisco is plus 240, so half the Lions price, then take off close to half a dollar, 60 more cents, and then you get to the 49ers at plus 240. Then it's the Cowboys at plus 650, the Eagles at plus 750, and then everybody else is four digits or greater. Green Green Bay at 10-1 and the Falcons at 13-1. Those other teams from the NFC South, the Bucs 25-1 and the Saints at 38-1, long shots. Ninth best number for Tampa. 12th best price for New Orleans. Only the Giants, Cardinals, Commanders, and oh boy, the Panthers are going to be bad, have a longer price. Carolina at 100-1 to win the NFC.
Yeah, I tell you, the team that stands out, really two of them. One, I'm a little surprised Philadelphia is behind Dallas. You know, they're on that line, I suppose, where, you know, it was 2 years ago, you know, an afterthought. Is last year going to be really the Philadelphia Eagles going this forward, or are they going to be able to bounce back and be really one of the best teams? I think they're going to bounce back and be one of the best teams. So I'm a little surprised with that one. And then the other one, really, is Tampa Bay, man. You know, they were a fourth quarter, 2 minutes to go drive from going to the NFC Championship game. You know,
yeah.
People tend to forget about that. They beat Philadelphia at home, right? They took the Lions right down to the wire. Baker throws that pick in the final minute, and that's the ball game. Otherwise, they're going to the NFC Championship game. You know, maybe they wouldn't have beaten San Fran, but for them to be 25-1 behind the Chicago Bears, that puts it into perspective. They are behind the Bears, who we don't even know who their quarterback is going to be, whether it's Daniels or Williams. To think the Bears have a better shot to get to the NFC Championship than Tampa Bay? I don't know. And Tampa Bay, perceivably, is in the easier division, right? I mean, in that they don't have the Detroit Lions in front of them. That's a weird number.
Yeah, I agree as well. And that also goes to speak, Scott, for what I think the NFC North is going to bring this year. I think that's going to be a competitive division with both the Lions and the Packers at the top of that division, separated by less than a buck to win said divisional championship. And now the Bears are not perceived to be all that bad. And Scott, that was part of the conversation that Joe Lisi and I had yesterday about the trade of Justin Fields to Pittsburgh, what it means for Fields' career moving forward, what it means for the Steelers quarterback room, but also what it means for Chicago. And you brought this up. I don't think we're going to hear from Ryan Poles or Matt Eberflus in the next few weeks say, hey, we're drafting Caleb Williams now with that first overall pick. I'm sure there's still some smoke screens playing out. Would the Commanders move up to try to get Caleb Williams? Would another team try to get up there for a quarterback? Chicago is going to take Caleb Williams at first overall with a 99.99999% chance of happening. In fact, after the Justin Fields deal, it increased Caleb Williams' price from -2,000 to -5,000 to be the first overall pick. Again, that doesn't mean if you bet that price, it is Chicago drafts Caleb Williams first overall, just that Caleb Williams is the number one overall pick. But again, the move by Chicago almost guarantees that it is Chicago holding on to first overall in making that selection. But that was a part of the conversation, Scott. When you look at the NFC North, when you look at how the NFC will play out in comparison to what we will see in the NFC South, with Caleb Williams, a rookie quarterback, regardless of how good of a prospect you believe he is, the Bears will be expected to be a winning football team in 2024 and more than likely contending for a playoff spot the entirety of the season. If not, the season will not be seen as a success. At least that would be the sort of expectation the Bears are bringing into 2024.
Well, they really are. And so are the boys in Vegas, right? By making them, you know, not necessarily an overwhelming favorite by any stretch, but, you know, putting them in front of Tampa Bay and New Orleans and Seattle and even Minnesota if they get themselves a quarterback. So a lot of pressure on them. You know, it's curious. I guess people thought in Vegas that maybe Chicago would use that number one overall pick on a wide receiver if they kept Fields, because I'm wondering why the odds would jump that much. Like, to me, it was always going to be a quarterback, whether they were going to take it or even if they kept Fields. You know, they would have been silly not to trade out of that spot knowing what they could have gotten. So I think that reaction bumping the odds way, way up like that, it's like, I don't get it, but more indication that they're going to go with a quarterback. And I will make this prediction right now, Ben. I'm real curious to see what Pittsburgh does with Fields and what Philadelphia does with Pickett as far as picking up their fifth-year options. They both have to make those decisions by May 1st. Chances are pretty good they're not, which means chances are pretty good Fields will not be on Pittsburgh next year and Pickett won't be on Philadelphia next year.
Yeah. Really good point, Scott, because when you think about where both of those guys are, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have said they are starting Russell Wilson, he's going to be quarterback number one, and frankly, I do not fault them, would then be tasked with picking up the fifth-year option of their backup quarterback. So if you believe in Justin Fields and beyond, you might as well see that play out right now. Kenny Pickett and Philadelphia have another year to determine that, but you would not assume that if Pickett is just sitting on the bench for a good majority of his third season.
That's why they got one more year.
The same, Scott, the same thought, really, Scott, when you think about it, right? Because if Pickett is going to be a backup and they have to make the determination even after 2024, what is Pickett going to show that he would remain with Philadelphia and they would pick up that fifth-year option for two more seasons on top of 2024, even as a reliable reserve for Jalen Hurts? Some news in college athletics and college football, Scott, on the other side of the break that just came down in the last half an hour or so. Even though it is the offseason, conference realignment never slows down. We'll talk about it up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
So as we teased right before the commercial break, it's been the theme of off seasons over the past 3 years in college sports, namely college football, the economic engine that drives the bus known as conference realignment. And with those sweeping changes happening in real time for the first time in 2024, the realigned Big Ten, the realigned SEC, it seems more could be on the horizon, Scott, in the next few weeks, the next few months, and of course then the next few years. After Florida State already sued the ACC, with some of that lawsuit starting to play out this week, Clemson joins in a suit of the ACC as well. Clemson is suing the ACC in Pickens, South Carolina, in a lawsuit that virtually asks for Clemson's exit about the ACC grant of rights and the longstanding TV rights deal that is one of the reasons the ACC has a longstanding conference membership, but also one of the reasons it makes it very difficult if teams would like to exit with a very large exit fee, keeping the ACC at least at the moment intact. But I say at the moment, Scott, very pertinently.
Yeah, I tell you what, the ACC is kind of hanging on, right? I mean, we saw the Big 12 apparently survive. Obviously, we saw the Pac-12 not survive. And now it's the ACC's turn to kind of have, a go with this thing. It doesn't look good, right? I guess they want to join the SEC. I would think South Carolina would have a say about that. But, in the big picture, Ben, this kind of goes back to what I had brought up before. In that eventually these big market teams and these big teams, whether it's, Clemson, Florida State in the ACC, or even Ohio State or Michigan in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten has gone positive, but eventually they're going to say, wait a minute now. Our conference is making, just pick a number, say it's $100 million. All right, we're making $100 million, and I got to share equal rights with Wake Forest? Really? I got to share equal rights with all these teams that really aren't bringing anything to the table, and this conference would be nothing without me? I don't want to do that anymore. So I'm going to go join a conference where I have equal partners. I have other teams that are going to bring money to the table, and it's not just going to be me. And, whether you're Vanderbilt now in the SEC or some of these other teams, I always wonder, whether these conferences realize that and say, we don't need you, Vandy. We really don't. We don't need you, Indiana, in the Big Ten anymore. Why do we want to split an even share to you when you're bringing nothing to the table? So it may take a few years, Ben, but it is clearly going towards two major conferences, all the best teams in those two conferences, Big Ten and appears to be the SEC.
Yeah, I think so as well, Scott. I really do believe at the current state of which we were at, we are probably trending more to the separation of FBS-level football from the rest of collegiate athletics. Again, all of this is driven by money. All of it is driven by TV revenue. It is not for geographic ties. It is not for the history of longstanding rivalries. It is done for TV money. We are seeing that in the new edition of the college football playoff as well, as the CFP late last week agreed to and ratified a new TV contract with ESPN that will pay the Big Ten and the SEC a larger share than the other conferences. It is not an even split between now the Power Four after the disintegration of the Pac-12. Notre Dame will make some money and also have an appearance fee tied to it. But where things stand at the FBS level of college football, which is the reason for realignment that affects every level of sport for the rest of collegiate athletics, we are getting to a point, Scott, in my estimation, where you will have a 64-team conference or whatever you want to call it of the best teams at the FBS level. The SEC, the Big Ten, some of those other power conference teams that continue to be led by football. Clemson and Florida State, Miami, those will be thought of as that. They will play at a different level in a different conference that might be tied together geographically in divisions like we see in the NFL as compared to every other level of what was maybe formerly FBS football or at the FCS level. And then every other sport, even men's and women's basketball, will operate in a system that is much closer to what we see now, so that Oregon track and field players do not have to go to Rutgers on a weekly basis to go run a track meet, so that a soccer player that plays at Stanford is not required to go to Syracuse to play an ACC match. Those kind of things, Scott, where you start to see FBS separate. And I think we're a little bit at this stage disenfranchised with the idea of conference realignment. At least I am. I can speak for my own personal beliefs here. When the first move happened with Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 to the SEC, and then the shocking moves of the Big 10 adding USC and UCLA, and then, of course, everything that we saw last offseason with the complete obliteration of the Pac-12, the Big 12 expanding, and all that we saw, and then Oregon and Washington joining the Big 10, just completely getting rid of what was once, just about a decade ago, the most premier conference in the country that actually had the best TV revenue deal in the Pac-12. I think, Scott, instead of being shocked or appalled by all of this, we're getting really close to just seeing the format of which we know FBS college football completely shift to represent the more professional nature that it probably has been behind the scenes for many years now, but has certainly come to the forefront in the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, the only thing that would stop that, it's kind of like college football's at the fork in the road. Do we go left and keep all these conferences intact and encourage that by adding more and more playoff teams? Or do we go right and say, you know what, we don't need these smaller conferences. And you know what, we don't need a 16-team playoff, as a matter of fact, as well, if we're only going to have top 35, 40 teams. I'm a little surprised that they're at that point so quickly. I do envision in my lifetime, Ben, them basically being, but like you outlined there, basically being a model of the NFL. I think they're going to come to say, they're all going to sit down and say, wait a minute, the NFL is making billions and billions of dollars. Why can't we do that as well? Let's take the top 40 teams, put them into conferences, like you said, and just make a carbon copy of the NFL, and you know, all the other smaller teams unfortunately go by the wayside. And I could also see elimination of a lot of these athletics. You know, with all this union talk going on, that's only going to get more and more popular. If they tell these athletes that they can unionize, that means contracts, that means benefits, that means a whole can of worms that I think a lot of these colleges are going to be like, you know what, we don't want to go down that road. See you later. You know, no more volleyball, no more track and field, no more bowling, no more lacrosse, and pick the sport, and we'll just go with the big boys.
Yeah, and listen, that's part of the threat to what the system of college athletics that we have come to know is right now. Not just NIL and the payments coming through there, but if athletes are deemed employees by the law that we live by in this land. And Scott, anytime the NCAA has gone to court to try to uphold their model, it has not worked. They have been struck down in the court almost unanimously time and again. Probably shows you the NCAA's stronghold over this idea of amateurism and student athletes has been a facade all along, as I think some people really started to know. But it just also goes to have a complete shift into how we look at collegiate athletics. It is difficult to swallow. Don't get me wrong. Part of the fun of collegiate athletics, part of the reason there was so much passion behind it, is because of the history, the tradition, and the pageantry, mainly led by college football. But it's just not a sustainable model at this moment, and we're almost reaching that crux of this conversation. Like, it's the linchpin moment where we look back on what was and what has to come, and we're kind of hitting that peak of intensity at this time. At least that's what it seems like, and will continue to be like this. Yes, are we going very big picture for Clemson following filing a lawsuit against the ACC? We're not going to even know the determination or the ruling or the conclusion of this for quite some time, but that's really where things are trending, so that when we have this conversation in 3 years, it could look very different than where things do now. None of these changes are going to affect, at least the Clemson and Florida State lawsuits against its conference, are going to affect the NCAA tournament that starts tonight in Dayton, Ohio, in the round of 64 on Thursday and Friday. None of these conclusions are going to affect what happens this upcoming college football season. None of that is happening right now, but it's starting to put in that legwork, Scott, of all of the drastic changes we have seen to the future landscape of college sports that is going to start to play itself out here over the next few years.
Yeah, about the only good thing you could take out of this, if you like, you know, the old ways, is I don't know if there's any more teen or college, I shouldn't say teens, but I don't know if there's any more colleges that we could point to and say, okay, they're kind of on an island. Like the Big 12 right now is, it is what it is. I don't think there are any more big boys left there that conferences would be going after. You know, if Clemson and Florida State both leave the ACC, we'll say worst case scenario, they join the SEC, whatever. I don't know if there's anyone else in the ACC. You know, outside of Notre Dame picking a conference, which I don't know if they necessarily would at this point anymore anyway, who else could get picked, Ben, do you think that would be attractive for the, you know, the Big Ten or the SEC to go after? I don't know if there is a school out there anymore, right?
Yeah, it's a great point, Scott, right? It's just kind of a reshuffling of the teams that we have at the Power 5 level. As you look at where things are at the Power 5 level, with the Pac-12 no longer existing, you really have the 18 teams now in the Big Ten. You've got the 16 teams in the SEC. You've got the 16 teams in the Big 12. So where are we at right now? That's 50. And then you have the 14 teams in the ACC. That is 64, and then you have the addition of Notre Dame, which is 65. If the Big 12 only has 14, we can go back on that as well. But we're talking around something, a 64 to 65 team threshold at the power conference level in college football, where you would see that conference and the level of sport it is played at different than even the Group of Five, the MACs, the Americans of the world. And they would probably have their own tournaments, their own conferences, their own divisions. We'll wrap up this thought on the other side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. So during the commercial break, Scott, as we see Clemson suing the ACC, they will join Florida State in lawsuits against their own conference, trying to argue the grant of rights and the exit fee or withdrawal payment is something that should not exist, so that Clemson and FSU, if necessary, could explore their freedom in conference realignment. I did the math. Starting in 2024, again, with the collapse of the Pac-12 and Washington State and Oregon State no longer included at the Power 4 level, the ACC will have 17 teams, the Big 12 will have 16, Big 10, 18 schools, and the SEC, 16. That's a grand total of 67 schools, plus Notre Dame, 68 of what you would consider the former Power 5, but now Power 4 level. So, the way that could then work, Scott, as many people pontificate and estimate could happen, is you would have a 68 team, and you'd probably get rid of a few to make an even number of 64, you could have a 64 school FBS conference that would operate on a semi-professional level, much like the National Football League. Eight divisions, more geographically tied, eight teams in said eight divisions, where you would work out a college football playoff format that would probably have to expand once again beyond that. And then you would have other smaller schools that we call the Group of Five, 65 at this level still in FBS, probably play in their own conference with their own divisions and their own TV rights deals. And it would be completely fractured, and maybe you would have some crossover from a Group of Five game with a Power Five game, but that's the semi-professional model that we're starting to emulate, and maybe in the next decade, Scott, could become more of a reality in college football.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, I don't think these teams are going to want to share the pie. Well, we've seen it already, right? Right. You had to beg, borrow, and plead to get teams to go to the big time bowl games. They didn't want to know part. You could have been Central Florida from a few years ago. Great little story. They wanted no part of that. So any chance they have of breaking away from the AAC conferences of the world, absolutely. I definitely can see them doing it. And really, it would be sad because you think of the NIT tournament now, which is an afterthought in the NCAA. I really think that's what these other conferences would turn into. Would any TV network be interested in the AAC or the WAC or even the Mountain West? If you're not going to include the Mountain West, I don't know. I kind of doubt it, to tell you the truth.
To the level that the Power Five conference would get or the Power Conference would get? Certainly not, but that's really where things already are. If you look at the highest rated games and how much money the Big Ten and the SEC make off their TV revenue deals as compared to even teams in the Big 12, but that's where you would get the idea, Scott. Would a Vanderbilt still be included in that Power Conference? Who knows? That would be something we would have to see. Those are teams that, based on the tradition and the history of their conference, benefit off a TV revenue deal that pays for everything in their collegiate athletics department. Do these universities have a ton of money where they could figure it out and probably have to open up the pocketbook a little bit? I would say so, but again, it's a complete fracture from the system that has been really out there for the better part of a century, but even with as much money as we have seen in revenue in the last 25 years would be very different even from that in recent history. But it's just the way things are going. And I think when you pull back the facade and the breaking news spectacle of this all, and it does stink because it changes what we have known and it changes the tradition of what we hold dear, it would just be something almost completely different. And again, I would say, Scott, that this FBS model that would operate semi-National Football League-like, I think would have to be and should be different from every other sport in collegiate athletics, because FBS football is a completely different thing and technically already does not operate under the microscope of the NCAA. It is the only sport that the NCAA does not award a national champion. That comes from the FBS level at this highest level in college football. That is a completely different governing body than that of the NCAA. This would probably break away from even men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, softball, so that would look like in conference structure, much like what we see, and might be better geographically for those students, for those athletes that play under that system. Again, these are all big picture things. Clemson suing the ACC is not about to bring this up by the end of May or by the start of the 2024 college football season by any means, Scott. But as these things continue to pile up and as more realignment happens, there are going to be even deeper changes to collegiate athletics.
Yeah, I can even see them saying, you know what, you got to buy in, right? Do we really want 68 teams? Not really, when we could pare that down to, you know, maybe 48. So here's the deal. You want to join our new league? It's going to be $5 million, $10 million, you know, pick a number, buy in. And that will weed out the, you know, the Pitt Panthers, Georgia Techs, Indiana's, maybe even the Northwesterns of the world, who might say, you know, we really don't want to be part of that. So, okay, great. You know, see you later. We're not going to get a dime less knowing that the Pitt Panthers aren't going to be part of our little conference here, or Georgia Tech's not going to be part of our little conference. No offense to those programs, but yeah. I could definitely see something like that happening.
Yeah. And again, what we're talking about here, and I think it's a fair point, Scott, is revenue. We're not talking about the passion of a fan base. We're not talking about even the success level of a football program relative to its conference or expectation. It's revenue. And money is a tough thing to really kind of take into grasp, but it is the thing that changes, and it is the economic force that leads to all of these evolutions. It's not an easy pill to swallow, but it is indeed that pill. Any further updates we have in terms of Clemson's lawsuit against the ACC, we will bring your way. But Scott, we talked about something at the very start of the show back in the National Football League that was a rather intriguing headline yesterday. The San Francisco 49ers have to forfeit a 2025 draft pick and will have their 2024 fourth round pick dropped by a couple of slots from 131 overall to 135 overall as a result of administrative payroll accounting errors. The National Football League announced that discipline on Monday afternoon. A weird story, Scott, that you would not think would have impacts on a franchise's future in the NFL draft, and yet here it does.
Yeah, it kind of struck me, Ben, because, you know, if you read, well, at least the story I read, it just, San Fran's kind of poo-pooed it. Oh, yeah, you know what, we made a little mistake. No big deal. We didn't circumvent the salary cap or anything. We just made a little technical error. Okay, no big deal. Right? But then you find out that they have to give up a fifth-round draft choice and then next year, and then a fourth-rounder moves down four slots. I don't know how the NFL came up with four slots, but okay, they're moving down four slots. So what's the big deal, Scott? Well, and think about it. Here are some of the players you could have gotten for a fifth-round pick over the last 2 years. Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Jerry Jeudy, Josh Dobbs, Mecole Hardman, Chase Claypool, Randy Gregory, Cam Akers. Superstars? No, Ben, but those are serviceable players. So back to the original point of, like, you're poo-pooing that it was just an accounting error, don't worry about it. But then you were willing and had to give up a fifth-round pick and move down four slots from the fourth rounder? There's got to be more to this than meets the eye. They either did something on purpose, it wasn't an accident, it did circumvent the salary cap, something, because you just don't give up a fifth-round pick that, as I'm explaining here, is a pretty valuable piece of property. It's not a seventh rounder, it's a fifth-round pick.
It's a good point, Scott, right? These are not just, all right, you were fined $50,000 for an NFL franchise that is probably in a billion-dollar revenue type of system. A fifth-round pick is important. A fourth-round pick. Maybe they wanted somebody at 131 that's no longer going to be there by the time of 135. You have to change your draft philosophy, to say the least. A fifth-round pick can be valuable. It can be a contributor to your football team. This is not just something that you kind of laugh at. This is something that the NFL deemed a violation enough to penalize them for it, to hand out discipline. The Niners did say in a statement, "We take responsibility and accept the imposed discipline from the NFL due to a clerical payroll error. At no time did we mislead or otherwise deceive the league or gain a competitive advantage in connection with the payroll mistake." But whatever the payroll accounting errors were at the end of the 2022 league year led to a misreporting of the team's cumulative player compensation. So what they're saying is, whether it was a cap space deal, a cap room number that was altered, something serious enough to lead to discipline. And Scott, when you think of, we had the conversation about tampering last week, right? In the legal tampering window that opened up 8 days ago, noon Eastern time. The Falcons were under consideration because of some of what Kirk Cousins had to say. The Eagles under consideration and the league would review based on James Franklin speaking about his former running back in Saquon Barkley. You might think, okay, what's the big deal? What do tampering violations really get you? Is Saquon Barkley going to be suspended because he spoke to the Eagles early? No. But the heftiest of those penalties are large fines for an organization. Okay, they can probably fork up the cash. But draft picks, that's what the NFL goes to. And draft picks are valuable. It is a valuable commodity for any NFL franchise.
Yeah, you don't have that many. Like I said, I rattled off a bunch of names there that you could acquire all those guys, you know, decent little players. So why would you, if in your statement you're saying it was just a little technical error, no big deal, we gained no advantage. If that's the truth, you know, I don't want to call you a liar. So if that's the truth, then why would you be so willing to give up a fifth-round pick? and move down four slots from the fourth rounder. Listen, I don't know what they did. I don't know if they were able to sign a player, trade for a player that maybe they wouldn't have had to have done. Maybe they forgot, oh yeah, we forgot to give this guy $1 million bonus and we forgot to include that. I don't know what they did, but it just, like I said, they poo-pooed it like, yeah, no big deal. But if you're a Niners fan, you got to be saying, well, what are we giving up a fifth round pick for that if it was no big deal? Had to be more than that.
Right, exactly. It's not probably a couple of dollars here or there. It could be millions of dollars over a cap that was misreported that does lead, as the NFL might argue, to a competitive advantage. If you're paying two superstars enough money that would equal the cap, but then you misrepresent those figures. And again, this is speculation. We're not saying some of these things could really add up to make a difference in terms of the actual play that happens on a football field. Again, the Niners are saying it did not lead to any sort of competitive advantage. Maybe the NFL felt differently. And if it leads to any sort of discipline, it was something enough. That would just be my guess. So it's an interesting story for the 49ers. It will not be something that is probably harming to them this year or change their outlook to win a Lombardi Trophy or any of that, but draft picks are valuable. Scott is right. Even with seven rounds, you don't have a lot of them. And that player you get in the fifth round, who knows what their career prospect could be and who knows what impact they have on a team, that will be the unknown now for San Francisco.
Yeah, and everything has seemingly gone right for the Niners, right? I mean, it just everything seems to fall in place. And maybe this, I don't want to put a black cloud on that, but, this might be the beginning of things kind of turning. Everything kind of evens itself out and things have worked out well, except for Brock Purdy getting hurt 2 years ago in the playoffs, mind you. But other than that, things have worked out well. Debo re-signed and Christian staying healthy and everything else. So hopefully if you're a Niner fan, this is not the start of bad things to come. But just an interesting little story. Yeah, that's all.
An interesting story during a time in the NFL offseason calendar when that tends to happen. So a couple of 49er free agency moves, by the way. Joshua Dobbs, one of the stories of last year in the National Football League, signs with San Francisco. They need some quarterback depth after we had Sam Darnold leave, and they also got Devondre Campbell as well. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break before we exit here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. So we talked about San Francisco in terms of the penalty that the NFL league office handed down for a payroll error, costing them a draft pick in 2025 in the fifth round. And they moved down by a couple of slots in the fourth round of this upcoming year's 2024 NFL draft. Scott, they also made some acquisitions. Devondre Campbell, who was let go by Green Bay, and he was not too pleased by that. It was in a similar move to letting go of Aaron Jones. They also get Joshua Dobbs, who was one of the stories last NFL season for what he did in Minneapolis to give the Vikings a spark midway through a season ago. He's been a very fast learner wherever he goes. Now he's a backup quarterback in a San Francisco room looking for a backup quarterback. Of course, Sam Darnold was the guy a season ago. He's now in Minnesota. Joshua Dobbs now in San Francisco.
Yeah, basically a trade, right? It is amazing. San Fran's quarterback room over the years has been loaded, right? Whether it's Jimmy G, move up to go get Trey Lance, Brock Purdy, great story, right? And now they have to go to the depths of Joshua Dobbs, who, listen, no offense, but he was 1-7 with Arizona, and he really wasn't any good with Minnesota. He's bouncing around the league. He's had ample opportunity. He's a good backup. That's what he is. He had a chance to, have his 15 minutes of fame, but, from a quarterback room that had so many bright young stars, now you're down to Joshua Dobbs. So it is clearly, if there was ever any doubt now, it is, clearly Brock Purdy show. They're all in, maybe for the first time. It's no Sam Darnold. There's no one that thinks you could challenge really Brock Purdy, so Purdy's the man.
Purdy is the guy, but he will have to have a backup just in case anything goes poorly. For now, it's Joshua Dobbs. Will the Niners draft a quarterback? I don't really think that's probably in the plan. So that's where it stands around the National Football League. Again, it's the lull of the NFL offseason, but as those updates continue to trickle out in the NFL or in college football, as we spent a good majority of today's show on, we will bring them your way. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on Football Full Circle starting at noon Eastern.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.